Sanhedrin, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Aleph, 3:1. Now the Mishnah is going back to discuss how the courts operate. And we start here by referring to something we said back in the first Perek, which is Dine Mamonos Beshlosha. You need three Dayanim to adjudicate a monetary case, where the two litigants are fighting over who owes who money and the like. We said already that midrabanan, this can be done by even three people who aren't smuchin, not experts, and even one person who is a mumcha, who is an expert, midrabanan. But the assumption here is we need to have a bezin of three under normal circumstances. Now, if there would be like an authorized bezin which had the authority to force people to come, so then essentially the local bezin would just force them to come. The plaintiff could go to the bezin. The authorized dayan, the person who's been authorized by the local Sanhedrin, Eretz Yisrael, or the Rosh Gola, the head of the Golus in anywhere really in the world. If it's an authorized party who's, you know, to authorize Bezdin or the local Bezdin that presides over the city, so then the plaintiff can just go to that Bezdin and just say, I want to sue the defendant, and essentially they would be forced to come. That's that. But there's a possibility of we don't have such a situation, or where the litigants essentially are prepared to agree to their own kind of ad hoc Bezdin. So then how would they choose the three Dayanim to comprise their court in the event that they have no obvious choice, or they opt to do it this way? So there's a machlokas here, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi, and the Chachamim. Rabbi Meir says, Zebor lo echad. So the litigant, let's call him the plaintiff and defendant. Okay, so the plaintiff chooses one judge, Zebor lo echad, and the defendant chooses one judge, Ushnehen, and then both plaintiff and defendant together, Boren lehen odecha, they choose a third judge, Divrei Rav Meir. So Rav Meir holds like this. If you can facilitate this where both of the litigants have chosen two out of the three judges, because they agreed on one together, so then each person will feel that they're getting a fair trial. And that's what we want. We want, you know, a din, that's a mishpat tzedek, that people also feel psychologically they got a fair ruling, and therefore that will make people satisfied. So that's a good situation. The Chacham omrim shnei hadayanim boren lehen od echad. The Chacham say each person can choose his own dayan, but then we won't need the consent of the two litigants to choose that third dayan. Rather, the two dayanim that they've chosen as their proxies will choose between the two of them a third person with whom they are agreeable. So that means that the two dayanim would choose the third dayan without the input or consent of the litigants. So Rabbi Meir certainly agrees that all the dayanim who sit on a bezin have to agree to sit on the bezin. And that means that if, you know, dayan A doesn't agree to sit with dayan B, so then it's not going to get off the ground. You can't force him. And of course, if dayan A feels that dayan B is incompetent has a bad reputation, like he will not agree to sit on the bezin to be part of that. So when everyone agrees that all the dayanim need to agree on the dayanim, the question is, do we need the input of the litigants, or for how many? Okay, Rav Meir says each person picks, they all do two, each the two out of three, and the Chachamim say each is one out of three, and then the third is picked from the dayanim themselves. So now the next part of the Mishnah says, can one of the litigants now object to the single judge that his opposition chose? So basically, loose speaking, Rav Meir is going to say yes. Says the Mishnah, ze posel dayano shel ze, ve ze posel dayano shel ze. Divrei Rav Meir. Rav Meir says each one can posel the other one. The psul here, the disqualification would be that the litigant claims that the judge that the other party chose is incompetent. So if the person would be recognized by the community already as a mumcha, as an expert, so then Rav Meir would agree there's no such objection. But if it's less than that, so then the litigant can say, listen, your judge that you chose is just not up to scratch. You have to choose somebody else. And that would be binding, meaning that, yes, indeed, that would be a good objection. Chacham omrim, emasai, bizman shemevi alein rayash, and kroven o psulin. The rabbis, and this is the halacha, say you can't disqualify the other judge the guy chose unless there's some objective reason. Meaning, yes, if he's a karov or a pasul, you know, if the judge is that the other guy chose is his brother, or, you know, is a criminal or something, then of course you can object. Once you have people who are objectively kosher, so the objection that the judge that your counterparty chose is simply not good enough as a judge, is not a good enough judge, that will not be That will not be a legitimate claim. So each person gets to choose his judge, and then, like the halacha, like the chacham, the two judges will choose the third. Zabla, Zed, each one chooses their own. Okay, now, a related point before we finish up here, which has to do with, one of the litigants act as a witness against the witnesses who are testifying against his case? That sounds a little strange. But Reb Meir says there is a scenario where that could happen. The Chum say, what are you talking about? The whole thing, the person is what's called, he's nogea. He's got a vested interest. How can we look at him as an objective person? There's evidence coming from his witnesses that he's, you know, going to lose his court case. So how could he impugn them? How could he be believed to say, you know, they're not legitimate witnesses? But Reb Meir says there is a scenario where it could happen. And the machlokas between Reb Meir and the Chum here in this last part of the Mishnah is in a very specific situation. If one of the litigants intends to bring two groups, kitos, two groups of witnesses, and according to Reb Meir, if you're doing that, you have to tell the court ahead of time, and if you tell the court ahead of time, now you're obliged to bring both pairs, both sets, okay, both groups of witnesses. the Chum disagreed the whole thing. They said, no, you don't have to tell ahead of time what you're planning on doing. You're not forced to bring multiple sets. You know, you can just, you know, you'd hold your cards close to your chest and not tell people ahead of time how many pairs of witnesses you're bringing. But Reb Meir says you can. If you do, you have to. So now, that being the case, it says, listen, the first group that comes to testify against Lacol and the defendant, so since we're going to have a second group anyways, the defendant isn't that nogea. Of course he's nogea, but he's not that nogea because the judgment can still happen based on the other pair that will come later on, which we know are coming because according to Reb Meir, the court was told ahead of time, and now they have to be delivered. They have to present their case, their evidence, their testimony, I should say. So, therefore, Meir holds in such a scenario where there are two groups of witnesses coming, the person against whom they're testifying, we'll call him the defendant. The defendant could be one of two witnesses who would impugn those witnesses, meaning that the defendant, along with one other person, would say those guys aren't kosher to testify because they're known criminals, you know, they're bank robbers or something. Okay, and the Chum say no, nothing doing. The defendant against whom these witnesses are testifying is—he's no geah. He's got a vested interest. He's biased. And therefore, he just isn't accepted as a witness against these guys. You'd have to get two. Of course, you can get other witnesses to say that they're bank robbers, but they have to be two people besides for the defendant himself. Okay, so that's the sort of outside. Inside, it says Zeb posel edav shel zeh. In the scenario I described before, we have that two groups are coming. So Reb Meir holds that either litigant can serve as one of the two witnesses that would cause the witnesses that are testifying against them to be rejected or, you know, cast out of the court, impugned, whatever the story is. V'chacham omrim, the chacham say, wait a second, amasai? Yeah, of course you can confirm that the witnesses are actually invalid because they're bank robbers or whatever the case is. But that's only bezmanchu mevi aleim raya shel kroven shehen kroven o shehen psulin. That's only when there can be two unrelated witnesses that will say that these witnesses are invalid because they're relatives, kroven or psulin, they're bank robbers, they're rishayim, whatever the story is. The Mishnah, as the parak will go on, will discuss more about kroven and psulin. We'll get there shortly. But in any case, you need outside people. They're not, the litigants themselves aren't believed as witnesses against the witnesses. Avalim Hayuk Sharon, if they're objectively okay witnesses, meaning they're not relatives or criminals, Rashaim, Enu Yochol Lefaslan, so then the defendants cannot serve to be one of the two witnesses to impugn those witnesses who are testifying against that defendant.